Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.
Thank you for listening to this Podcast One production. Now available on Spotify, Apple Podcasts, PodcastOne.com, and anywhere else you get your podcasts.
Welcome. You're tuned into the best in paranormal talk radio. This is Darkness Radio. I'm your host, Dave. That's Tim. Hey, Tim.
Hey.
Listen, we got great shows lined up. Man, we've had some fantastic guests over the last few weeks. I want to thank all of our listeners. Again, if there's a guest you want to hear featured on this program, send us links, send us contact information, whatever you've got. We love to broaden our horizons talking to all types of amazing guests, and we've had some fantastic ones recently. And again, remember, folks, we have an Amazon shop where you can get most of the books and access to the documentaries, DVDs, and such that we talk about on this program. So where do you find it? Go to darknessradio.com, click on the store tab, and then you'll open up. You'll see our Amazon storefront button there. Click it. It'll take you in, and we have the paranormal books as a side. We have a true crime section. We've got paranormal gift items. So everything is all laid out for you right there in front of you, making it very easy to access. Interesting today, Tim. We've got an interesting guest joining us. Barbara Holland is with us. She's written a book called Anatomy of a Haunting, A Journalistic Approach to Understanding the Paranormal. Our guest, when she isn't writing or engrossed in her studies, likes baking cookies, which made her an automatic favorite of Tim and I.
Oh, yes.
For guests. She's living quietly in Erie, Colorado, where she basks in the light of her family. And she's here to share with us some of her unique insights and aspects with this book. Thank you so much for joining us today, Barbara.
My pleasure.
And yes, Tim, I'm aware the word is not insights, it's insights.
Well, you know,
but my mouth, my tongue and my brain are not working together in perfect concert today.
Oh.
So this is an autobiography of sorts, Barbara, for you, kind of opening up and talking about this strange set of experiences that have been a part of your life, correct?
Correct. It's an autobiography.
And we have a link up for that book in today's program, folks. So you can click that link. It'll take you directly in. It's available on Kindle or paperback edition. You can get it right through our link. So make sure you go check that out. And, Barbara, have you always led a bit of a paranormal life?
Well, I started out my life that way. We moved into a haunted house when I was about 3 years old, and I never forgot the things that went on there. Kind of put them in the back of my mind because mm-hmm. I didn't have any activity for quite a few years or significant activity, but every morning in that house, I would hear something clomp up the stairs, very loud footsteps, come up to my bedroom and stand over me. I would close my eyes and cover my face because I didn't want to see it. And sometimes it would try to pull the covers off of me. It happened the same time every morning. And sometimes I'd hear it chuckle a little bit, like it was receiving glee from scaring me to death. And it would just disappear. I couldn't see, I had my face covered, but I wouldn't hear the clomp, clomp, clomp going back down the stairs. It would just go away and I wouldn't know when it had left. So I would just keep those covers over my head till it was time to get up. And it happened.
How old were you when this started for you that you recall?
I was 3 years old, and I remember it.
And it's that deeply ingrained in you that you remember that activity taking place. How long a period of time did this happen to you?
It happened for approximately a little less than a year, I think we lived there. So, I don't know, a matter of maybe 9-10 months.
Did other family members also relate strange supernatural phenomena taking place there?
No. And the thing about it that's interesting is my brother and sister and I all shared one room. It was a fairly big room, but they never experienced anything like that. Just me.
Really? Why do you think you were singled out?
I don't know. I think it might have to do, I don't know. I just had a tendency, I guess, in that way. I honestly don't know.
Now, when you look back at this, did you talk to your parents about these memories, and did they ever have any insight for you?
Oh, my poor mother. You know, I begged her. I begged her, Mom, please, you know, please don't make me sleep up there, you know. And she would tell me it was just a dream, but she knew the house was haunted because there were dishes falling out of cupboards and the sound of voices in the distance when they couldn't be coming from anywhere that we could see. So she knew it was haunted. And I believe she knew that this was actually happening to me, but she didn't know what to do. She was hoping, I think, that if she told me it was a dream, I'd believe it and it would go away, but it didn't.
Wow.
Yes.
So think she knew about this. She was just trying to protect you by not really talking about it or acknowledging it then.
Absolutely. And I don't know what else she could have done, honestly.
Right. Right. I mean, what is there really you can do for somebody in that situation? You can't put your hands on them and drag them out of the house or take it away. So you just kind of have to live with that aspect.
Yeah. And I know that when we moved, a lot of it had to do with me and these experiences. She just hated that I was going through it.
So when you got older and you were open with her about this, did she ever go deeper into conversation with you about what she thought might be going on or who might be haunting there?
Oh, she didn't have any idea about that. I mean, she believed it was happening to me, but she didn't have any insight as to why it was happening other than the house was haunted. And that much she did know. She always acknowledged that. I just had this little extra special thing that happened to me. I heard the voices too. They'd keep me awake at night.
Looking back at it through the eyes of an adult, right? If this happened to you today, do you think it would be as terrifying? And I don't mean shocking. Shocking, of course, something's yanking your blankets off and you hear footsteps. But to me, I mean, it truthfully, it sounds like something my grandfather or my dad would have done to get my lazy butt out of bed in the morning. You know, he would have come in and clomped up the stairs, walked in, yanked the blanket off me and let out with a hearty laugh and then walked out, you know, telling me, hey, it's time to get moving. Do you look at it as still as though you think this was something trying to scare and intimidate you? Or now do you look at it as though it was probably just a playful spirit in the house?
Let me say something about what you just said about your father. I thought, you know, to myself after the fact, and I had to think about it a little bit, because when it would happen, I would hear my dad leave the house. And my dad was an intimidating, very scary man without any of this. So, you know, when someone asked me one time, well, do you think it could have been your father trying to scare you? He would leave. I would hear him go out the back door. And that is when I would hear the clomp, clomp, clomp. I could also hear the car take off. So he was gone. So it was definitely paranormal. If something like that were to happen today, it would not faze me. I have been through enough with my haunting that very little frightens me.
So you lived there for about a year and had these experiences, and it would happen quite often. Now, you said you also would hear the voices. And now you remember that. I mean, at the age of 3, that's pretty young. But of course, these are pretty standout experiences, so it's easy to understand how you might remember them. But the voices, how could you tell that they weren't just the TV or radio on in another room? You were a kid, you know, how do you differentiate that now?
We didn't have a TV in those days.
I don't have time for your logic, Barbara. I don't have time for your logic. All right. So that makes sense. But how about, you know, your parents having a conversation a room away or something?
No, it was like, it was muffled voices like you would hear at a party, that from a distance. And I recognize that now is residual. And I do believe there was some residual haunting going on there as well. Manchester was a pretty active little place in the day. And I think I was hearing some party animals from the past. My mother heard them. My grandmother heard them also. So,
as an adult, have you ever tried to research more about that old address? Do you remember where that house was?
Yes, I tried to research it. I tried to get help. I don't have the know-how to do it. I would have liked to have known more about it. The interesting thing about that house, I came to the end of my book. And as I was ending my book, like on the last few pages, my sister called me and said they tore the house down today.
Wow, really?
I mean, it's not like the world revolves around me, but to me, it was somewhat synchronistic.
Well, you know, they're not an advertiser on our show, but if you look up the website diedinhouse.com and type in your old address, I think it's like $12.95 for a full report. They'll actually go back as far as they can and let you know if there were any deaths known and associated with that house. It may actually give you a name of who that might have been clomping up your stairs.
Yeah. Well, diedinhouse.com?
Yep, diedinhouse.com. Not sponsors, but they should be of this program. Diedinhouse.com. Yeah, when you type in the addresses, unless you know the address changed at some point in history, sometimes that can get a little wonky. But as long as you know that that was the address when you owned it or when your parents were there, it should give you some insights going back to the original owners as much as it can. Or if it doesn't say, you know, hey, John Smith died in this house, it could say that John Smith died, you know, when as an owner of that house, giving you some insight to who's there and what's happened, or, you know, perhaps what was going on. Did you ever reach out to family members or people that lived in the house after that to see if they had any experiences?
No, because, I mean, I haven't lived in Washington State since I was in my 20s. And to an extent, I mean, I think you already know that I had an experience with a dark figure in the next house that we moved to. Now I've lost my train of thought.
I'm sorry. I was just asking if you had been in contact with anybody that ever lived there, but you answered that by saying you never went back after, the age of 20 or so.
Well, I did go back, but there was no one for me to talk to.
Oh, okay.
You know, it was years, like 20 years later. So,
gotcha.
Yeah.
All right. Now, so that was your first experience with the supernatural. And aside from the blankets being pulled off and you know, the laughter and the footsteps and conversations, were there ever any other scary moments that stand out to you from that original haunting?
There's something that is very vague in my mind, and I think it was the last straw for my mom. She found me locked in a closet. I mean, I believe I'd gone in there myself to get away from something and shut the door. And I guess I was absolutely scared to death. And like I said, I think it was traumatic enough that I can only remember what I'm telling you. And her remembering it. And I think that was it. She said, We're leaving. We've got to get out of here.
Really? So, she became that aware of, we need to get out of this place.
Yep.
Now, do you remember getting in that closet or how you got locked in? Does any of that resonate with you still?
No, I don't. I do remember it happened. I remember my mom and me just begging that we could leave, that we could get out of there. That's all I remember.
Was it your dad kind of fighting that, or what was going on?
I don't think so. They they went out and they found a really nice little house for us. So,
but it was probably you were tied into a year-long contract or something for renting the place, and it's not just easy to pull up stakes and get out of those deals, is it?
Yeah, no, it isn't. But we did. I don't know how they did it. I just know that we got out of there, and I'm sure glad.
All right, going forward then, how soon was it again until you found yourself in a haunted situation?
I am not sure of when it started, but when we left that house, I was close to 4. It was probably a couple years after that I started seeing a dark figure in the doorway of my bedroom. I shared my bedroom with my sister, but she never did see it. Now, I should say, too, from the time I lived in that haunted house until recently, I couldn't sleep at night. I was, as a child, so afraid of what might be around me, or a little bit afraid of my dad and things that were going on there, that I just couldn't sleep at night. And I'd be awake at ungodly hours. I'd go to bed and I'd beg my parents, could I just get up for a little while and watch TV with you? I just can't sleep. And sometimes they'd let me get up. Most of the time I'd go back to bed, and then I'd say, could I get up about 5 in the morning and go for a walk? You know, because I couldn't sleep. And so I was awake at times everybody else was asleep. And sometimes I'd be sitting up in bed, and I just lift up my eyes a little bit from a book I was reading with a flashlight or something, and there would be this dark figure. And it would just be standing there watching me. Huh. And it scared me to death. Every time it came, it scared me to death, but it never did a thing to me. It just stood there and watched me, and then it would just disappear. Like I'd blink and it was gone. But sometimes it would stand there watching me. It seemed like forever. I would say, now that I've been haunted by other things, that it probably wasn't forever, but maybe like 2 or 3 minutes. And that's significant. Once again, it becomes an imprint in my mind because it happened frequently, not as often as the other thing, but.
Right. Well, you said something interesting, and I don't know how deeply you are willing to dive into this, but you said that you were frightened by different aspects of this, and sometimes even by your father. Was this a sense that was also held by your brothers or sisters? Were they also, did they have issues with your father as well?
My father was a very abusive man. Mm-hmm. Like most people, he had some redeeming value. Every once in a while, we'd see him actually try to be a good father, but it just wasn't in him. He was mentally ill. I think I don't mind talking about what happened to me because it's turned out to be a very important part of my book. And honestly, I'm surprised about that.
Did he, were you the main focus of the abusive nature of your father, or was it pretty well spread around?
As far as the incest, it involved my sister and myself.
All right. The only reason I ask, and again, not trying to push, but as you said, it's a big part of your story, is, you know, often people wonder what is the catalyst for people to start having these moments. And because things seem to center around you, it appears that you were, in fact, a poltergeist agent. You were perhaps the battery that was creating the energy template for this phenomena to take place. Whether it is true ghost-like activity or if it is poltergeist phenomena that, you know, how you ended up locked in the closet might have been a psychological thing. Not saying that it was only in your mind, but perhaps an expenditure of energy that puts you in there trying to keep you safe and protected. And this black shadow standing in the door, always watching over you. You know, we've spoken on the show before, shadow people is certainly something that, you know, can be very chilling and terrifying for some, but we've often wondered how many times are these shadowy figures more sentinels or guardians that watch over us? And if you were in a position of fear and a position of trauma, it makes sense that that may be what this being was doing, was watching and you know, there for you in a sense.
In retrospect, I believe that. As scary as he was, he would be scary to a child. If I were to see him now, I mean, it would be different. But as a child, my goodness, he seemed so tall. He seemed, you know, and but I do tend to veer toward exactly what you're saying. The RSPK part, the poltergeist part, it's one thing to talk about it. It's another to be told you're an agent. It's hard for me to accept. It's hard to me accept it as an adult going through a haunting. It's hard for me to accept that I was causing these things as a child. But I do try to look at it with an open mind because I've had enough people right. tell me, you know, and including yourself now. Thanks a lot.
It's not meant as a way to say, oh, this is all your fault. That's not it at all. The intention is that because you're a person that was in a spot of chaos and anxiety, our body responds and we don't really know how to measure those energies that are expended during those stressful times. And, they found that in a lot of cases, there is usually one person that the paranormal activity centers around. That's the paranormal or the poltergeist agent. I was meaning that more in the sense of maybe that's why brothers and sisters, they didn't experience it or experience what you did, that these could have been projections there to protect you or projections from you that were there during this and that kind of chaotic energy that just most of us have. You know, I've seen it around some of my own children when they're in levels of high stress. Equipment doesn't work right. Other strange phenomena might take place. So it's interesting to me to hear your aspect on how this played out. Are you comfortable in saying at what age did the activity between your father and you and your sister begin?
You won't believe it, but it started when I was when we moved into that house, and I don't remember which happened first. I don't remember if it was the clomp 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 in the morning. I don't remember if it was incest with my father. I don't know which happened first. It continued until I was about 14.
And was the phenomena always strongest during that point, would you say?
And that's hard to tell, the memory thing. But I mean, obviously, it happened in both houses. I don't know.
After you said this happened until around the age of 14 for you. At that point, the incestual relationship stopped?
It stopped when I started having periods. And I think that was about at that age. And it stopped for my sister about the same time. Well, at the same time.
And
Thank goodness.
Did you have many paranormal experiences after that point, after the abuse ended?
Just the dark Victorian man. I don't know if you've read my book or you've heard about it or you've skimmed through it.
Yes.
Pardon me?
Yes, I have skimmed through it. That is correct.
Yeah. Let me see. At that age, I told a friend of mine what had been going on with my father, and I told her not to tell anyone. She told her mom, who then told her to tell me. I either told my mother about it or she would. So not knowing how to go about it, I've always kept journals and diaries, and I had a diary. And I wrote a little bit about something that had happened with my father, put it in my top dresser drawer, and when she was putting away my clean clothes, there it was right in front of her face. And she called my sister and I into the bedroom, into our bedroom, and asked us about it. And what a horrible thing for her.
can only imagine.
She, people and the shrinks that I've seen have said, oh, she knew. She didn't know. She really didn't. She was a sheltered little girl. Her father loved her. She couldn't imagine something like that. In her wildest imaginings, knowing that he was somewhat, knowing that he was abusive anyway, she never dreamed of anything like that. To see the look on her face, I still see it. And she, her head just dropped into her hands. She didn't know what to say. But she went to my father the next day, and she had been, like most women in those days, completely submissive to my father. And she went to him, and she asked him about it, and he denied it. And she didn't believe him. She went to her Episcopal priest, father, whatever you would call him, and told him about it. And of course, they were very much against divorce in the Episcopal Church at that time. And he told her that he wanted my dad to come in and see him, and that maybe they could talk about it and, you know, figure out what had actually gone on. And my dad refused, and mom said to him that he needed to get some therapy then, and he walked out the door. Mother's Day 1964, I believe. And right before he left, and this is the hard part, he only spoke to me, and he said to me, Barbie, this is not your fault. You know, that could make a person feel good, or it could make a person feel bad. And to see that better side of him, it made me feel bad. It made me feel like I'd done something really awful. And then when I would have to watch my mother working so hard, because he left the country after a place and time, and she ended up taking care of us on her own. But the difference in our home after he left was unbelievable, unbelievable, just incredible. We had all been we were scared of him. We'd get paddled over just about nothing. And so it's interesting, because I have suffered from guilt my whole life over all of it. And I know that sounds ridiculous, but it's true.
Sadly, it doesn't. And I understand, you know, I understand why you would feel guilty. And for a lot of people, sadly, that have been through this can understand that as well. But have you come to terms now as an adult that, you know, this wasn't your fault? This was a man that was sick, and you coming forward was the best thing that could happen for you, your sister, and your mother to get out of that toxic environment. No matter how hard things may have seemed going forward, that wasn't a life that any of the three of you deserved.
No, and I agree with that. But even with all the therapy, and my therapists were in a bad place, because I thought I'd taken care of all this. The fact that I felt little tinges of guilt once in a while, you know, come on, grow up kind of thing. And so when they try to discuss it with me, I tell them, no, I've already taken care of it. I don't want to discuss it. And one time, my last therapist, who is just a saint, got me to talk a little bit about it. And that got me talking to my sister a little bit more, and got me talking to my best friend a little bit more about it. And my sister said something to the effect, when I said something about the guilt I felt, she said, Barbie, if you hadn't done that, we probably would all be dead by now. And it was hard with my dad. It was really hard with my dad. And I know it was the best thing, but when she said that, sometimes people can say something and they have no idea. But those were the words I needed. And I needed them to come from her.
Well, I'm glad that she was able to do that for you then and open that up for you, because you did. You know, opening up, those things happen for a reason. Being open and sharing with a friend and putting it in your diary and doing that did save all three of you from a life that was not a life that, as I said, any of you deserved.
Yeah. And I don't, you know, my brother, I guess I would have to say of all of us, I was Dad's favorite. And it wasn't just because of the one thing that we've been talking about. He would actually confide in me once in a while. I would go places with him and there would be no problems. You know, I mean, we had some good times. It wasn't all bad, but there was always this undercurrent of fear. And I always knew he wasn't going to stay the way he was. You know, enjoy it while you can, because it's not going to last. And I wonder if he wasn't bipolar, tell you the truth, or possessed, or had an attachment. You know, there's a lot to wonder about.
Well, and we want to put things in a compartment that makes sense. And it's probably easier to believe that somebody was influenced than for them to say, you know, that no, there was mental illness or there was sickness or something. And what begat what? Could there have been a spiritual possession of this masculine force that was yanking your blanket off of you? Was, you know, was this force influencing your father? Or, as you said, you know, what came first, the chicken or the egg? Did that become a part of a projection because of the fear that you were in and not knowing how to protect yourself as a child at that early of an age?
And that's really insightful of you to say, because I've wondered the same thing. And other people have wondered that as well. You know, maybe he became possessed in that house. I don't know. I do know that ultimately we're all responsible for our lives. I don't blame my mental illness. I don't blame the haunting. I don't blame the incest. Everything is up to me. I'm not here to have a whole lot of fun. We're here to be tried. And we have to overcome our trials. And I don't see it. The thing that's hardest for me about the book, and yet the most meaningful, is the incest, because people feel sorry for me, you know, and that's not why it's there. It's there for a very specific reason. It's a part of every facet of my life. And I knew it had to be a part of the haunting. And the fact that it was written on the second page of my book probably wasn't conducive to people being interested in my book, because it's very raw. And, but yet, if you're going to write an autobiography and you can remember your life from 3 years age, you know, 3 years of age, and there were significant things that happened, you know, it ended up on the second page. And my son, who was kind of helping me with my editing, said, "Mom, are you sure you want to do this? Are you sure you want to do this? Or do you maybe want to write it in a little different way?" So, you know, I thought about it, and then I went to my daughter and I asked her, and she said, "Nope, you leave it just like it is. That's the way it was."
Yeah, your story and your honesty may continue to help more people than you'll ever know, with the raw nature that you're able to share this experience. So I applaud you and your strength and your daughter's wisdom to have you share the story as it happened and as you remember it, not dumbing it down or sanitizing it, because this could give some really interesting aspects and insights to many people that have been in your situation.
And I want to add this, especially to you, because we're both what I call seekers. You know, we're trying to figure this all out. I have had three different people contact me who have been sexually abused, and they have a dark figure that follows them around and attacks them just as I do. And it's given them some insight where, you know, where maybe they are getting psychological help for this. Maybe what they really need is an exorcist or someone educated in paranormal things to help get rid of the dark figures, because now this has become real to them. Now they're feeling like it's not in their head. And do you find it true that so many psychological things like that, there's two ways of handling them? When you can't get it fixed psychologically, let's try the spiritual.
I agree. If you're seeking, I think it's important for people to seek the psychological aspect of help and try to get insights that may help them heal that you're not going to get from a medium or, a deliverance person who might come over and, you know, wave a feather in a puka shell filled with sage. Although that may be helpful, it's not getting to the core root of the situation. And in your case, this is something that you needed as a total healing, something that you could work on psychologically and then spiritually defend yourself against the, how do I want to put this? I mean, certainly somebody in your situation, there were some weaknesses put into your armor, and those needed to be refortified and okay. Spiritually, psychologically, and physically. It's not for us or our listeners to judge, oh, this woman's crazy. She was just physically and sexually abused. Therefore, she's projecting. We don't know that. We can't say that with 100% certainty. So I applaud that you tackle this in many ways by looking at the psychological aspect of what she went through and trying to heal that, and then examining the spiritual aspect and trying to heal that, because all of it could play a part in the entirety of the picture. And when you only fix one part, you're not really fixing it. You're putting a Band-Aid on something and hoping that it's going to hold. But you've got weaknesses in all the other aspects that haven't been addressed, and that can be what causes the imminent collapse, in other ways, and could lead to possession, oppression, and other dark manifestations. So you're right in healing the entirety of who you are, as opposed to just one or two aspects of that.
Very good. Yeah. I think this life offers us a lot of crap. And, you know, I just feel like the devil exacerbates it. If you got something that's giving you problems, he's going to see it. He's going to hone in on it. And I don't know. I'm not putting living here down. I want to be here a lot longer. I'm loving my life more than I ever have right now. So I love this life, but I say it's not meant to be, you know, a cakewalk. It isn't meant to be that. Do you agree?
I completely agree. And, you know, I won't say things dismissively as though, well, each one of these things are a learning point for us, because it's hard for people that have lived through this to think, well, I didn't need to learn this and I didn't want to learn this, and that wasn't a choice that I would have made. And I'm not necessarily one that buys into the premise that in between lives we choose the journey for our next life, and we chose to be somebody abused, we chose to be somebody hurt, because it doesn't make sense. So I would never dismiss what you've gone through with something that broad stroke. But you're proof of the fact that those things that happened to you were not what defined the person that you would become. What defined the person that you became is how you reacted afterwards and how you pulled yourself up and moved forward and have a healthy, happy, productive life and children and being a good mother, a good wife, good human overall, with all of our flaws. That is what's going to define who we are and what the legacy is that we leave behind us.
Yeah. And I've thought about it a lot, and I do feel we choose to come here, and I think it's a crapshoot. Whatever happens to us, we need to get through it. And we have two forces. We have good forces and we have bad forces, and we need to try to stay with the good. And even, I mean, for, it wouldn't make any sense for us to come here because we want to be tried and then take our trials away from us. As bad as what I felt at the time, I'd pray as a child, please take this away from me. Please don't make me go through this. I can't do it one more time. You know, nothing changed. And it took me a long time to understand that wouldn't have been the best thing. I came here. This is what happened to me. God helped me through it. And that's what life is about. Not to avoid things, and I don't believe I chose that. I really don't. I believe it's just a crapshoot. And
I'm sorry, go ahead.
And it's up to us to seek help.
I agree. And again, I applaud the strength that you've used to get to that point and seek help and realize that seeking help is not the sign of weakness. Seeking help is the true strength. So congratulations for doing that and setting a much better example for your children.
I got the best kids in the world.
Well, I'll fight you over that, but okay. Let's do this. We're going to take a quick break. We'll come back. We've got more to discuss. The book, Anatomy of a Haunting, A Journalistic Approach to Understanding the Paranormal. Barbara Holland, our guest, when we return to Darkness Radio.
Oh, boy. How was your pain this week? I'll tell you, mine was off the charts. If I could tell you what I'm doing just to talk to you this week, you wouldn't believe it. My speech is a little messed up this week. I had an interesting encounter with the dentist, so I'll try to get through this as fast as I can. Hey, it's your buddy Tim for Feels. Thank God Feels is with me this week. It has been an abomination of pain this week. Not only my regular pain, but throw some dental pain in there as well this week. I'm dealing with some incredible stress, incredible anxiety. I don't know if you have anxiety dealing with the dentist. I do. Let's talk about that for a second. Sitting in a dental chair, hearing that drill, and then hearing that they're going to pull some teeth. Man, let me tell you, I shook and I shook and I shook. And they just told me they were going to do it. They didn't give me any warning. And I was shaking when I got home. I mean, and it's the one thing, I don't have much fear of anything in my life. I had fear when it came to this. And I was shaking when I got home. So what did I do? I came home. And I had my vial of Feels because I needed something to help me with that anxiety, that overwhelming anxiety. Thank you, Feels, because I came home, I had a dropper full of Feels, and it, you can tell, there's a shakiness in my voice just thinking about it, and it just mellowed me right out. I appreciate it. Thank you, Feels, for that. I appreciate it. I've had to use Feels a little bit more this week because it has been a painful week. I've had a lot of extensive dental work done. It's hard for me to talk to you right now because of the extensive dental work I've had done. Dave had to take over the yeoman share of the work this week, so I thank Dave for that. And I've had trouble sleeping this week too, so I thank Feels for helping me with that as well. You're not alone when it comes to this. Chronic pain and anxiety and trouble sleeping. Feels is there for you. Feels is premium CBD delivered directly to your doorstep. What does Feels do? Well, Feels helps you naturally reduce stress, anxiety, pain, and sleeplessness. And it's there for you whenever you need it. It's real easy to take. You just place a few drops of Feels under your tongue and feel the difference within minutes. The thing to remember about CBD is that finding your right dose is important, and everyone's dose is different. So leave room to experiment over the course of a week or so, and you may need to take more or less to get the effects that you're after. If you're new to CBD, it's okay. Feels will offer a free CBD hotline to help you guide you through your personal experience. You can feel better naturally. Feels works naturally to help you feel better. There's no high hangover or addiction. And you can join the Feels community to get Feels delivered to your door every month. You'll save money on every order, and you can pause or cancel at any time. Why you'd want to cancel, I don't know, because I'll tell you, Feels has been in my corner now for quite a few weeks. I'm getting relief from this pain every single week. I wouldn't want to go back. I don't know why you'd want to go back once you try it and experience the relief that you're getting from Feels. And I apologize for my speech. I feel really bad, but it's a temporary thing. Feels has me feeling my best every day, and it can help you too. And I thank God Feels was in my corner this week. I really do. You can become a member today by going to feels.com/darkness. You'll get 50% off your first order with free shipping. That's feels.com/darkness to become a member and get 50% off, automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. It's Feels, feals.com/darkness. Become a member, get 50% off, automatically taken off your first order with free shipping. Do it today. feals.com/darkness.
Podcast One presents. This is a collect call from Sing Sing.
My name is John J. Lennon. I'm locked up for selling drugs and committing murder. I'm also a contributor for Esquire magazine and the Marshall Project. So I'm a writer and I'm a prisoner. Imagine trying to stay focused and talk about issues of substance with gates slamming, prisoners screaming, and PAs blaring in the background.
Get new episodes every Wednesday on Spotify, Podcast One, and Apple Podcasts.
Barbara Holland obviously sharing a very powerful aspect of her story, an insight that many of us don't hear when we investigate the claims of the strange and supernatural. And tipping back now that we have an understanding of the life that you led and the human elements of what was taking place, the shadow person that you would see in your door, the kind of activity that you would experience, Were there ever any voices or sounds of it moving, anything else that you could attribute to this supernatural force?
Nope. No.
Okay.
It was very still, just stood there watching me. And like I said, I tend to believe what you've put forward, which is that he was probably a protector.
And I know that's hard for some people to hear because you think, well, what the hell did he protect her from? Obviously, she still had to go through that. She still experienced the horrific nature of what took place. But, you know, maybe what it was the protection came in the way of the madness of what your father was doing to you was not followed by the madness of what supernatural elements might be there as well. The darker elements, things that could take advantage of a vulnerable child and break her further with oppressing you and possessing you. Maybe that's what they were there to do, to save you from any further spiritual damage.
I kind of feel like I could look back when I was going through my 4-year haunting that I put in a journal. I recalled these things that had happened to me that had happened quite some time before. And I had through the years determined that they probably didn't really happen. But it was invaluable to me to look back on those things as I was experiencing another haunting, the similarities. I don't know, somehow I think some of us are meant to be spiritually open. And if we're spiritually open, we're going to get the good and the bad of what is spiritual. And I think that there were three things that I think of when I think of my childhood. I think of the dark figure. I think of the ghost in the first house. And I also think of what I felt, honestly, I don't know if you read about the poltergeist experience, the Ouija board experience.
I'd prefer you tell us and walk us through these kind of stories as we progress through your history. So if you'd like to open up a little bit about that now and understand, folks, we're still giving you a cursory look at her story. There's so much more in depth, and she does a beautiful job in crafting this book and really putting her story out there. So, you know, please do pick up a copy of the book. We have a link to that book in today's program. So you can find it right there, link it, buy it, read it, and then rate and review the book as well. But there's so much more that we're just giving you a kind of a glossary look at today. So please talk to us about the Ouija board experience.
Well, I'd have to go back in my book. I think I was like around 11 or 12 years old. And my cousins and I decided we want to play with a Ouija board. And a Ouija board was just a game to us. I mean, we didn't realize it as being anything else. I'd actually, my mom and I had fooled around with it before and never had any kind of bad experiences. But so here we are downstairs, me and some of my cousins, and we're playing with the Ouija board. And it starts spelling out something. And so my sister is writing it down as it's coming forth, and it's spelled out, beware of phony poltergeists. And, I mean, we didn't know what a poltergeist was. Right. We'd never heard the word poltergeist before. This is way before the movie. So we went up and told our, you know, my sister told them what had happened. And yeah, the thing that's interesting and the thing that has followed me is the word phony. My concept of poltergeist is completely different from the mainstream thinking. I think it is, some people see them as demonic. Some see them as ghosts. I see them as something different. I was a very introverted child. I had all kinds of fantasies and crazy little things that would happen to me that were actually endearing to me, and they have continued throughout my life. It's like they used to be described as tricksters, and this is still how I kind of see them. They're magical. They can do amazing things that I don't think are prompted by the devil or, you know, it's a matter of semantics, I guess. I just think there's something different, and I think there's something that need to be studied a lot harder. I don't know exactly what they are, but if in fact, you know, I created something and this is what it's attached to me and that's why it's endearing to me. I don't know, but there's so many things that have happened in my life that have just been so magical. And I've always attributed those things to a poltergeist. And I think the word phony, like I said, it's never gone out of my mind. It's kind of like they're used as patsies for other things. That's kind of how I see it, just from my personal experience. And once again, it's not the way anybody else sees it, I don't think.
It's your journey and your understanding and exploration, so we accept that. But you have, obviously, these experiences around you. Were other people ever witness to the experiences that you were having, even though they may not be seeing the experiences or having them in the same way?
When I first started having a haunting in my brand new house in Broomfield. There was a lot going on in my house, but I thought there was actually someone in my house or someone knocking on my windows or, you know, stuff like that. I didn't attribute it to anything else, and I'd call the police and ask them to come and they'd search my house and there wouldn't be anything there. The first thing that happened when I decided this is something different, it was really a couple of years down the road, was the doorknob jiggling. It happened all the time. I'd hear like a doorknob jiggling, and especially on my bedroom door. And no one was there but me. So I had nowhere to put that. And my daughter, well, actually my whole family came over for a family dinner, and my nephew and my daughter heard it, which was just so redeeming for me. So redeeming for me, because my daughter's always believed in this kind of stuff, and she would tell me, "Mom, these kind of things happen. You know, these are actual things that are happening to you." And so for her and my nephew to hear that was a big deal. But there's very little that my family experienced, or if they did, they just didn't bring it up. You know, I don't know. But I mentioned that I was being told by those, or it was being suggested to me by my psychologist, my counselor, that these things were hallucinations. And I was almost diagnosed. I wasn't diagnosed bipolar till 2005. And I think I'd had a problem for a long time before that. But now I forgot what I was going to say.
Well, with that, and I mean, getting a diagnosis.
Oh, yeah.
Like that, you know, that has to be impactful as well.
It is. It actually, I mean, getting the diagnosis was really great, because I knew something was wrong with me. I'd known something was wrong with me for a long time. I went from being one person to being another, just like that. I mean, I had a attempt of suicide, and I didn't do it. I fell asleep before I could take my pills, and when I woke up the next day, I was somebody else. And I mean, I used to wonder how in the heck that could have been me that did these things that I was. I mean, it was, I thought I was in a coma or something. I couldn't believe what was going on. And yet I just continue being this other person and acting out in ways that were, I mean, my ex-husband was a Mormon bishop and I was his wife. And it wasn't happening during the time of his being a bishop, but the point is, we were very religious, and I started falling away when I was in my 40s, and I don't know.
Was there a specific aspect of your story that made you fall away from it?
Fall away from
religion in itself? Did you just feel as though it wasn't,
no,
helping?
No, what happened is they started, I have a real curiosity about things, and I started getting church callings that involved studying the Mormon church, where I would be teaching, and I got more interested in the church than I'd been before, and I decided it wasn't true, and it had nothing to do with bipolar. I don't believe. And I left the church before I was divorced. Even I was surprised when my husband stuck with me, but I could no longer play into something that I didn't believe in. And I was giving my whole life to it before that. So for me to be diagnosed, okay, back to the thought, to be diagnosed bipolar was redeeming to me. It gave me some idea as to why I was acting out the way I was. And that was a big help. And then to get therapy, and I did go on medication, and I was on medication for quite a while, but I was on medication and off medication during the time of my haunting, and it didn't make one bit of difference either way. Same things happened.
Did you seek help from paranormal people to try to corroborate the experiences that you were having?
I did, especially after I got my tape recordings. You know, I'm like, I think I told you I got a recorder, and I mean, that no longer could I be told that this was in my head, a hallucination. And so I did. My daughter helped me find some people very much into the scientific part of it, and they came out. And there were a few things that they, I mean, a light went on without, and nobody turned it on. One of them heard some knocking in the hallway, as I did. And so, but they kind of, you know, they say, you've got an attachment, you know, whatever. I think they spent about 4 hours and they went around the house. And I mean, they were really a big help. Just the fact that they cared enough. And I kept trying to pay these people and they wouldn't let me pay them. And now I understand why. This is a labor of love. What you do and what they do is what they love to do. And they're curious like I am. They want to know what's going on, and it's a learning experience. They don't want money for it. And now, as I look at it, I think that's just so great. But they gave me another set of investigators, and they were with me through it all. And especially the gal who is a parapsychologist. She was amazing, but she absolutely stuck to the fact that I had a poltergeist. And honestly, I have to give her some credit and say, yeah, there were definitely, and I call it RSPK. I don't call it poltergeist activity. I separate the two because I think they're different. But I understand where she's coming from with that completely. But the determination was made after the first year maybe of some very, very heavy hauntings, that there was more than one thing in my house. And I just think it was my lifestyle. I think it was my past. I think it was everything that just caused all kinds of chaos. And I would be, it was a terrible time. I don't know how I got through it. I really don't. I don't think I necessarily did it well, but I'd hear banging and knocking all night long. All night long. I'd try earplugs. I'd try everything. In addition to that, I had things that I felt were poltergeist activity, like I'd hear rocks. It would sound like a pebbles going down the walls in my bedroom behind my bedstand, and my headstand. And as soon as I would open my eyes, it would stop. The thing that I call poltergeist activity, they have some very specific sounds that have been attributed to them for a long time. And pebbles are a sound that poltergeist seem to be real good at, pebble sounds. And bells ringing, could hear bells ringing, just all kinds of things like that. And then in addition, I'd have loud crashes in my house. I mean, that would shake my house. And I think they were two different things. Now perhaps what I call a poltergeist was in fact a ghost. I don't know. I think that's possible. But I think there was a distinction for me between the two, because I would hear small little sounds that weren't frightening at all. Just sometimes I'd say, hey, stop. And they'd stop. But they have a very short attention span. They'd stop for, you know, 3 or 4 minutes and start again with these little sounds, you know. The crashes, the knocking all night. Oh my gosh. It was whatever it was, and I believe it was demonic, because along with that I was getting attacked with what I call incubus attacks. And
wait, so you were also having sexual attacks by these spirits?
Yeah. Now I have to say, when we talk about rape, we're talking about control for the most. Do you remember that philosophy? I don't know if it's changed, but when I was young, it was like when a woman was raped, we were told it was more about this person controlling you than it actually was the act itself. And these things would get on top of me, and some of them would choke me, so I couldn't speak, but I couldn't speak anyway, because they have a power where you are completely paralyzed. You are completely helpless. There's nothing you can do. To this day, there is nothing I can do when one of them attacks me. And it doesn't happen as often, and it just doesn't faze me anymore. They go away, and I don't see one for, you know, months. So it's not like it's an everyday occurrence around here. It isn't. They get no energy from me whatsoever, because I'm not scared of them. I know I'm paralyzed. I know what's going on, and I just wait for it to stop, and then I banish them, but they had already left, so I don't know. But still, I do. I banish them in the name of Jesus Christ. There's another kind of attack that I would get, and it was different. It was with what I would call an evil spirit, where I would get into bed, and I would feel, I'm a side sleeper, and I would feel something put its arm around me from the back, and then it would start squeezing me. And I mean, squeeze me to the point I could hardly breathe, but I could still speak, I could still move, and I could still try to fight it off. And I think these are two different things. I think incubus attacks are, there's no control over them. I mean, they don't bother me as much because they know they can't. Do you know what I mean? They just can't bother me anymore. They come and go. The evil spirits I can banish in the name of Jesus Christ, and they go away. But I can't say, like I said, there were a number of things going on in my house. A number of things. And I'm sure I was the instigator probably of some of it, but a lot of it had to do with my lifestyle. I was a loose woman. I was. I have to admit it. I'm not proud of it, but I was.
Well, a lot of times, somebody in your position that was molested at an early age has a problem with trust issues and developing healthy relationships, especially sexually, because of what they've gone through. So loose woman seems almost dismissive to you. I don't think that was something that was, I just think that might be a little bit too harsh of a judgment on yourself. It's your life to lead and your examination to explore, but I just don't want you to, I don't want you to continue to put that label on yourself, because you were and are still living a life that is impacted by actions that others put upon you. And you are, you sound like you're very good at maintaining a level of strength and not being victimized. You have been victimized, but you don't allow yourself to be a victim. And I appreciate that aspect of who you are as well. But, you know, the more you hang on yourself, titles, the more you begin to believe or train yourself that is a reality. You were a sexually active person that many of us are, and dealt with things in a different way, seeking something that you felt was missing. So I don't think that necessarily makes you a loose woman. It just, you know, makes you a vulnerable human that was seeking comfort somewhere.
And I'll go along with that. I put that out there, and you're right, I shouldn't say those things about myself, but I put it out there because people know what I'm talking about. You know, if I say that and I admit that, then I mean, then I'm saying, yeah, I was sexually promiscuous. I was these things. And I think that played into a lot of it. And when I left the Mormon Church, unfortunately, I left God too. And He had not been a part of my life for a long time. And what is the saying about foxholes and soldiers?
Right, that's when you're closer to God, is when you're in the foxhole in the midst of it, is when you're calling out.
there are no atheists in foxholes. That's right. What the saying is. Well, I was in a situation where nothing was working. And I asked God for forgiveness and asked him to come back in my life and to help me. And he did, but it was a long time coming. It didn't just come right now. I think I had to go through some of this stuff. But it was going back to him that brought me my peace. And it took a long time. It took a long time. I still had incidents. I still had stuff going on. There are so many things in my book, and I think there's so many of them that people can relate to something. They're going to find something that has happened to them in their life that maybe they want to look at a little closer. And in fact, some of the things that I mentioned may not have been paranormal. They may be have been. It gets real hard when you are experiencing something like that to decipher which is paranormal and which is just a clump. You know, so they're bumps in the night. You know, they're not anything. Just something going on outside or your refrigerator or whatever. So, The journal was very important, and I can't even begin to talk about all the things that happened to me. But it was an interesting time, but it led me to where I'm at now, and I'm on the good side. I have of the spiritual realm. I have spirit guides that protect me to a large extent, and I'm able to. I have some mediumistic tendencies. I don't know if mediumistic is the right word, but I am able to communicate with people who have passed on, and I've actually been able to help a few on to the next life. And I cannot tell you, and perhaps you already know, I wouldn't trade that for anything. I wouldn't trade my conversations with just those who pass through my house and just need someone to talk to. I wouldn't trade the opportunity. My brother is a visitor here in my house. He comes, my kid brother passed away, and he comes and he visits quite frequently. And I wouldn't trade that. I wouldn't trade any of it. It's just, you know, every once in a while I'll get a bad apple, but they're not that bad. I just don't communicate with them. I just turn it off. But if you're going to be open, you're going to be open, just like in this world, there's good and there's bad. And I'll take the bad if I can keep the good, because I've got pages and pages of conversations I've had. And I do it not, I guess some people call it automatic writing, but I start writing and I have conversations that I write down with these entities that come to me. And I've never asked for any of them. I don't, I'm trying to remember all the language now. I don't conjure anything ever. They come to me if they want to. If someone were to come to me and say, could you try to get a hold of my mother for me? I'd say, no, I don't do that. You know, I leave myself open, but I don't ask for any of it. And I don't provoke anything. I don't play with Ouija boards. I don't do anything to bring these things on. But I have so many good experiences I've had. As a child, I used to visit an old man. His name was Mr. Sanborn. He lived in a house that would be considered a tiny house these days, little log cabin. And I saw him as a lonely old man, and I would go visit him. And he was always so kind, and he had these Presto logs he'd put in his fireplace, and they always had such a distinct smell. And I never forgot that man, but it was right after meditation when I take the opportunity to write down thoughts, or if someone comes to me and we have a conversation, I write it all down. And the name Mr. Sanborn came to me, and I'm like, what the heck? You know? And I heard him, and I said, Mr. Sanborn, can I help you? And he said something which is really interesting, and I still to this day don't totally understand. He said fours, and I got it as F-O-U-R-S, like a number. And I think that it has to do with what is it, the number numerology. And it means a lot of different things. It means good health. It means, it's a very positive thing for him to say fours. And I said, you were always so quiet and so sad. Are things better now? He said, mistaken, a little lonely maybe. And I said, can I do something for you from here? He said, I just wanted to say thank you. Can you believe that? And I said, you're welcome and thank you. I mean, the last person I would expect to come to me just to say thank you, just because he could, just because I was open. I wouldn't suggest to everybody that they be open, but I love it. I love being open to the earthbound spirits and to spirits from on high. I love it.
Well, Barbara, I can't thank you enough for your honesty and openness in telling us your story and walking us through this very delicate situation and what's happened. Do you ever think that maybe you should try to shut down the extra abilities and everything just to give yourself a chance to be away from that and live a quote unquote?
I do sometimes. Like, I've been thinking about this podcast for a long time, and I've been trying to spiritually prepare for it. And as soon as we're done, I'm going to make a potato salad, and I'm going to spend the next few days. Yeah, I'm here in my house, stuck here and everything, but I've got plans of things I'm going to do that have nothing to do with the spiritual, except I talk to my guides every day. I have to, because if I don't, I believe I'm much safer and much happier with them in my life. I don't have to spend hours doing it, but I do need to talk to them, and I need to pray every day. And that aspect has to happen. But as far as spending some you know, heavy time doing these things, I have times where I'm more into just living this life, and I have other times where I'm just living in the spiritual. And sometimes I'll be living just a normal everyday life, and I'll have a great experience, a spiritual experience, and that's okay with me. I have had so many this is my next book. I've had a visit from my grandmother, my father's mother, that was incredible. And there are things that I wouldn't trade. I can't step away from it for very long.
Okay. Well, and that's part of your journey to continue on with. The book, again, is Anatomy of a Haunting, A Journalistic Approach to Understanding the Paranormal. Barbara Holland, our guest. We have a link up for that book in today's program, so you can find it easily. And please do rate and review the book, because that helps put it out there for these authors and brave authors that are willing to come forward with their stories to share, so that they get a higher elevation in the book charts on Amazon and such, and more people can find them and share their stories. You've certainly given us a unique perspective today and an insight that we don't normally, I don't think we ever hear, when it comes to real world and paranormal colliding and what can become of it. So, Barbara, thank you very much for being here today.
Thank you so very much for the opportunity.
All right. That's it for this week, folks. We'll be back again next week with more of the best in paranormal talk radio. I'm Dave Schrader. That's Tim Dennis. And this is Darkness Radio.
Brand new luxury apartments. If you're in the market, listen. Brand new luxury apartments. Champion has a new property, River Park of Dublin, which is a mile south of Dublin. Location is everything. Spacious 1, 2, and 3 bedroom homes, designer finishes, resort style amenities, exceptional customer service. That's Champion. Champion's brand new luxury apartments, River Park of Dublin. Now do something about it. Visit livewithchampion.com. Livewithchampion.com.